It's nice to know we're back on track. Last Sunday, there was a little glitch, and so those listening at home, those who were our radio congregation, they didn't receive the first Sunday in Advent because there was a glitch. They just played the Sunday before over again. And I really appreciate those who noticed. That was very, it's kind of very significant. So we're back on track, and it's the second Sunday of Advent. Certainly there's a little bit of a teaching moment in that, you know, be vigilant, be watchful, you know, pay attention, you know. That's kind of the messages that are coming out all throughout Advent. And today we have an interesting aspect, because this is the second Sunday in Advent, and it might be a little strange for many people to take a look at the gospel reading, because the gospel reading is the beginning of Mark's gospel, but it's the second Sunday in Advent. The first Sunday in Advent was about the middle of Mark's gospel, and the second is the beginning. You scratch your head and you say, well, why is that liturgically? Liturgically, because embodied in the gospel of Mark and in that passage last Sunday was that warning. The warning. There's going to be an accounting. It's going to be an accounting. And now the second is the beginning of the gospel with the statement of Mark encapsulated in that very first proclamation of the very first statement in Mark's gospel, very first statement. And it, of course, that statement that Mark makes is, in the beginning, this is the beginning of Mark's gospel, and what he says is, and it, pay attention to this one, which is really interesting. He says immediately, the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Again, the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Here, encapsulated in that phrase, is everything we're involved in. Everything. And Mark is now kind of telling you right from the beginning, as the author of this gospel, this is what it's all about. So pay attention now to everything else that comes in and through the gospel. I really like the fact that we're called children of God. I like the fact because children are given a lot of latitude, cut a lot of slack. There's a lot of people who kind of are offended by that. They kind of think in terms of the intellectual ability that we possess or the knowledge that we possess is making us partners with God in this world. We're not partners with God in this world. God is God. We're not. So whatever we lay claim to in terms of knowledge and intelligence is only a fragment of the power and the understanding of God. A fragment of power and understanding of God. But I don't mind being called the child of God. In fact, I embrace it. And like I said, children are cut a lot of slack. You know, people smile when children make mistakes. You know, there's one little boy who was praying as our father. He was a four-year-old. And he prayed out loud the part that says, and forgive us our trash baskets as we forgive those who put trash in our baskets. Children hear what they want to hear. You know, they assimilate things that are very knowledgeable. Trespasses certainly wouldn't have been something that understood. Not bad, though, in terms of what he said, because it's trash. A trespass is trash. It's sin. It's sin. Children also kind of take upon themselves an understanding that sometimes can be quite literal. There was, again, a little four-year-old boy who was at his favorite aunt's wedding, and he couldn't make it to the rehearsal the night before. So he made it, and he was in the procession. So they gave him a little pillow. You know, as he's coming up the procession, and he's walking up the aisle. And as he starts to walk up the aisle, he takes a few steps, he stops, and he puts his hand up and goes, rawr, rawr. He walks a little bit further, stops again, picks up his hand. Well, all of a sudden the congregation starts laughing. I mean, they're in hysterics by the time he gets all the way to the top. And this little boy's crying. He's wondering why they're laughing at him. The priest can't avoid it. The bride comes up the aisle and he turns and he says, Johnny, he says, why were you doing that? He says, I'm the ring bearer. I'm the ring bearer. Bearer, not bearer. Bearer. God forgives our misunderstandings in terms of our own life. And as children of God, we're cut slack. You know, God understands us as children and treats us as that. And even in our intellect, as we pull ourselves forward, as we celebrate the great knowledge and gift of knowledge that God gives us, he also understands that oftentimes we make mistakes about it. There's misunderstanding. That's why he gives us the church. That's why he gives us the revelation of his Son, so that we can always be put on the right track, so we can always understand. The very first aspect, if you take a look at any relationship, a relationship with one another, an essential relationship of a husband and a wife, if you take a look at one of the causes that sometimes will cause what seemingly is a tremendous relationship to break apart, most individuals will immediately say lack of communication. Let's just throw that one right out, lack of communication. We fail to continue to enter into the dialogue which helps us to understand the mystery of the relationship and the mystery of the other. I say that because take a look at our own spiritual life in relationship to God, especially during this time in Advent, when what we are called to be prayerfully watching and waiting, to be open, to create an environment. And how do you do that? Communication. Prayer. Prayer. One enters into this prayerful relationship with God, always opening oneself to that mystery. In true dialogue in friendships, friendships are never taken by advantage. One person does not claim to know totally the other person. They're always open to the surprise that other person offers to them in the insights that come in the dialogue in the relationship. Surprised. Think about our own understanding, even if somebody is as close to us as parents in our lives. I remember as a boy growing up, I happened to be at home and I was sick. You know, one of those colds that you get, so mom kind of kept me home so I wouldn't. It was like 7th, 8th grade that I was in, so I was kept home. And I remember looking out through the window and seeing my father come in through the back alley that we had, coming into. He finished his 8 hours of work. And it was the first time that it struck me that this was the man who goes to work every day, 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours a day, to put food on the table for us. You know, he was father before and stuff, but the insight of growing in terms of the sacrifice and the relationship that was there, said he wasn't just dad that I could take for granted that all was going to be there, but it was someone who consciously was sacrificing and working so that we would have a better life. Our relationship with God, think in terms of that same aspect, our relationship with God. What is it that God provides us? What is it that God gives to us? And that can only be accomplished as we enter into the dialogue to enter more deeply into the mystery of the life that's here present. So in this aspect, it's communication for this aspect of Advent. Communicate to God, with God, about God. The second is an interesting aspect. I'm sure everyone here, if I asked you, do you love God? You would say, yes, I love God, of course. Are you crazy, Archbishop? Why do you think we're here in church? Why are we kind of gathered around the altar? Why do we do it? Do you love God? When a young girl will come up to me in confirmation and she'll take the name Mary, and it's not the Blessed Mother, it would be Mary Magdalene, I will say to her, I said, do you know she really loved Jesus? She's, oh yeah, I know she really loved Jesus. No. I mean she really loved Jesus, really loved Jesus. And you know how I know? She'll look at me and say, no. It's because she changed. She transformed. She became different. And then I'll ask her, who's the first person that Jesus appears to at post-resurrection? And of course she'll answer, oh, Mary Magdalene. I say, you know why? Because she was seeing Jesus with the eyes of love. She was seeing Jesus with the eyes of love. If you love, you got to be different. Your life can't be the same. If you love, you've got to be different. You've got to be transformed. Not the way necessarily you want to be, but the way God wants you to be. Transformation is part of the aspect of love. You can't imagine your life without the person that you love. The person is so essential in your life that you just can't imagine. And even when that person leaves and is taken from you, think in terms of individuals within your own families. Think in terms of your parents, close siblings. They die, they are still a part of your life. My dad died in 86, and when I'll see a billboard that's dedicated to the Marines or something which is there, I say, first thing I think in my mind, I got to call my dad. Well, my dad's not there any longer. But why? He's such an essential part of me in terms of the aspect of my life. The same is in terms of my mother. The same turn in terms of my friends and people who have been significant in my life. I can't think of my life without them. Without them changing and transforming me in some way to look at life differently. Well, then my question to you, do you love God? How have you been transformed? How are you different because God is in a relationship with you? Because you love God, how are you different? Wonderful question to ask during Advent. Wonderful question. How are you different because of your relationship with God? How are you different? And what has God in your life done to transform you? How do you look at things differently than what the world asks you to look at? How do you look at things differently because God has given you this type of view, this type of sense, this type of sense? So communication, transformation, and the last aspect is this whole push, if you want, liturgically towards Christmas, is an opening of ourself to wonder and awe, to celebration. And what is that? That's an aspect that we have to be ready for the fact that God will manifest himself in a way we least expect it. A way we least expect it. It was obvious in terms of the Jews and the Israelites thinking in terms of a Messiah that it would be literally an aspect of the Davidic kingdom that would be returned. John the Baptizer, locusts, camel, hair, cloth. This is an image that they would be familiar with in terms of Elijah, the great prophet. And what was Elijah supposed to do? Elijah was the prophet that would come again to announce the kingdom. This would be it. God's presence in the world would be Elijah's coming. What do we see Elijah again? Transfiguration. You got Elijah on one side, the prophet of prophets, and you got Moses, the great lawgiver, on the other. Jesus in the middle, who brings both the law and the prophets together in his person. Well, here's John the Baptist. This is the Elijah. This is Elijah who has returned to talk about the new kingdom. But the new kingdom is not going to be the Davidic kingdom of power. It's going to be the kingdom of love. which transforms and communicates God's presence to the world, which transforms, love transforms and communicates God's presence to the world. And there's only one thing you could do. You step back when understanding and you celebrate. All of Advent is sweeping towards the moment when we celebrate God's coming into the world that communicates his love and transforms us. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.